The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now we have Dee Malumbi and Ron McDermott with us, and we're going to talk about some new releases. By the way, in a little while we'll be talking about sequels that took massive numbers of years to come to screen. The reason being there's going to be another Bill and Ted sequel. But let's talk about first Us with Elizabeth Moss, the wonderful Elizabeth Moss from things like Mad Men, The West Wing, The Handmaid's Tale. She is in Us, which is what, Dee, is it about?
So Us is, a lot of people remember Jordan Peele, of course. He directed one of the biggest movies of a couple of years ago, Get Out, which was a really groundbreaking horror. And this is his second feature. Us, in this film, we follow Lupita Nyong'o's character Adelaide, who's returning to like the beach house where she used to spend her summers as a child. And now she's going there grown up with her husband and her two children. However, their idyllic holiday soon turns into a horror fest because a family of doppelgangers appear and start to terrorize them. This film is absolutely phenomenal, but I did find, and I know Ro and I were talking about this off air, I couldn't help but like be watching it and kind of constantly analysing it for kind of clues and hints, because Get Out was a very like multi-layered film and everything. I did slightly prefer Get Out because I kind of preferred how that film had slightly more ambiguity to it. I thought that Us in its finale and everything was kind of a bit too like neatly wrapped up, but I still found that there were so many layers and layers on which to enjoy Us. It was so intriguing, but it was also very funny, and it's a real movie nerds kind of movie.
What did you think of it, Ro?
I mean, I think Jordan Peele is a genius, genuinely, and he's kind of been playing with the audience in the release of the film, because it's called Us. It's not a coincidence that also is US, because there's a line in this that's very much about America, and Jordan Peele has said this himself, it's very much about the divisions in America and how we can be our own worst enemies. That idea of confronting kind of your sinister doppelganger and what we do to each other and how fear is instilled in us is so incredible. We're not going to give away too much of the plot because I think everything is essentially a spoiler. I will say the performances that Jordan Peele gets out of actors are unbelievable. The performances he got out of Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out was phenomenal. And he gets a similarly phenomenal performance out of Lupita Nyong'o here. She plays Adelaide, and we see her first as a child in 1986, who goes through a traumatic experience at a carnival. She revisits that scene later as an adult and a mother. And it's about trauma. It's about like intergenerational trauma. It's about America. It is a little bit about race. It's about xenophobia. But it's layered with these brilliant horror moments. And I think it's actually more of a traditional horror film than Get Out, because you have these doppelgangers, you have nods to home invasion films, zombie films, kind of pod people. It's a bit gory, it's a bit bloody, it's incredibly tense. It's also very, very funny.
Let's hear a clip. This is where Gabe sees strange figures on the driveway and decides to confront them.
I did. They're 14 minutes away.
What? 14 minutes? Okay. Jason, give me the bat.
What bat?
The baseball bat, the bat. There's one in the
corner. Here.
Thank you.
Gabe.
All right, hold on. I got this. Let's try this again.
Gabe.
No. All right.
Gabe.
I got this. Now, I thought I already done told y'all to get off my property, okay? So if y'all want to get crazy, we can get crazy. Now the cops are already on their way. Hey!
Okay.
That is the sound of things indeed getting crazy.
Right. What's the other movie this week?
We have The White Crow, which is directed by Ralph Fiennes, who most people know as an actor. But this is his third film, and it's about the ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I had no idea who Rudolf Nureyev was going
you're
into
kidding.
This. No, I didn't. I was unaware of this figure. And I think if you're going to see it, don't be like me. Just do a quick little Wikipedia search, because I think it will do wonders for your experience of this film.
He was exceptionally famous in his time. He was a cultural icon.
Russian
Cold War defector.
There are some gaps in my knowledge. Who would have thunk it? But Ralph Fiennes, he directs this very reverent biopic that really focuses on Nureyev's early life. So it focuses on him being born in Soviet-era Russia, his training under Alexander Pushkin, the ballet trainer, not the novelist. And then moving to Paris and working with the ballet company there, but then enjoying Paris so much that KGB monitoring him are getting very worried and want him to come back to Russia, and he defects. And this isn't a spoiler, it's all set up very early.
A major international story.
Oh, I didn't hear about it.
You're so young, you're so young. What'd you make of this?
I actually missed this one.
Ah, very quickly. Oh, yeah.
I think it's Ralph Fiennes. He's an incredibly elegant director. And I think he manages the three strands of the story very well. He sets up this idea of an oppressive society and the importance of art through this. He also hires, most of the film is spoken in Russian. He hired a lot of Russian actors, including the lead actor, who's called Oleg Ivanko, who's actually a ballet dancer. This is his first major performance. I will say, he does not portray Nureyev as a likable character. And I like complicated characters. I don't think characters need to be likable, but he's so rude and arrogant and just insufferable throughout the whole film. And I think, again, had I known the legacy, there's a bit of forgiveness when you know someone is an absolute genius. But I don't think they actually play the ballet scenes as well as they could, because they show him as being quite a passionate performer, but they're constantly iterating. Technically, you're not perfect. It's the passion you bring to the scenes. But I actually found him slightly stoic. So it's an impressive, kind of admirable performance and not a really emotionally engaging performance. And I felt that about the whole film. There's something that is a bit stiff. The three strands are managed beautifully, but two of them aren't really necessary. And the final act, when Nureyev wants to defect, it turns into kind of a very tense 70s thriller. But coming after this kind of slow-burning character study, it feels like a huge tonal shift. And while it's very exciting and interesting and engaging, the tone doesn't carry all the way through. So I think Ralph Fiennes is almost trying to tell too much about a particular period of his life, where maybe taking a broader look or just focusing on a character study might have made it slightly more engaging, because I think there was just, I was coming in and out of the story and trying to connect with the characters until it got tense. So I think it's worthy, but it's not necessarily the most entertaining film I've seen.
Let's hear Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, the surprise announcement they made yesterday on Twitter about Bill and Ted.
Hi, I'm Alex Winter.
And I'm Keanu Reeves. And together we are
Wild Stallions. And we are here at the Hollywood Bowl, where we'll never play.
Never play.
No. But we're here to announce something.
Yes. We want to say thank you to you, the fans.
We do.
Because it looks like we might
actually,
hopefully,
make a movie this summer.
Bill and Ted 3.
Face the Music.
Yes.
And it is all because of you guys, and so we owe you a huge debt of gratitude, and we wanted to say thank you.
Thank you.
And be excellent.
Be excellent.
This follows on Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which are how old at this stage?
So, actually 30 years old. The first film, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, was released in 1989, if you'd believe it. So I'm so glad that these two guys are together. Even like watching that clip on Twitter, I have to admit, I just had a big beam on my face. These two were just like so cute and adorable. And I love that Keanu Reeves is kind of making a comeback in cinema now with the John Wick film. So he can definitely pull off being an action star. I'm really looking forward to seeing him go back into comedy again. So this film, so reports have said, is going to be called Bill and Ted Face the Music, and it's going to follow them now in their adult life. They're married, they have kids, and they're kind of looking back on all of their adventures and how they were supposed to save the world. And life hasn't really been that way. So it's almost being described as a kind of a Christmas Carol-esque type of story, where they're looking back on their lives and kind of wishing that maybe they'd done something a bit different with them.
Do we need this?
Do we need any sequel? But we keep flocking to cinemas. There is something culturally happening where I think we're seeking a bit of familiarity, and we're not seeking out as many original stories, because sequels are just, we're being inundated with them. And a lot of them are coming decades and decades after the original.
Dumb and Dumber 2 was 20 years after Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey first did it.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they should have left that one.
Wall Street Money Sleeps was 23 years after the Michael Douglas original.
And there's something interesting happening with that gap, because if a sequel comes a couple of years afterwards, you're still in a cultural moment, you're still targeting the exact same audience. But when it comes decades later, you're targeting a different audience as well as the original, but the cultural moment has changed. So it's a really difficult position for directors to be in, to kind of capture what was important about the original film while also making it relevant and introducing a new audience to this story. So I think it's a very tricky thing to do. And I think very few directors get it right. But I think we have seen some really interesting interesting sequels in the past
Mad
years.
Mad Max Fury Road was 30 years after Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
And that is a fantastic film.
Brilliant.
I genuinely think it's one of the best action movies to come out in years. And it's just so visually stunning. And George Miller just knows that universe inside out. And he was really, really able to kind of modernize it and
Absolutely.
Use all the technologies that we now have at hand to bring this kind of audience and to introduce a whole new generation to Mad Max, as well as kind of, you know, give proper, you know, credence to what came before it as well.
And I think Blade Runner 2049 was also a beautiful remake and a sequel, mm-hmm. but it played with technology. It plays with new fears that we have about technology and identity. Like the visual effects were stunning while also remaining very true to kind of the origin story of that. And the performance was incredible. Even bringing in Harrison Ford mm-hmm. to Blade Runner 24 is such a brilliant casting choice because, again, you're speaking to two different generations and you're reintroducing him to a generation who might have never seen the original and might have only vaguely memories of the original. Just such a brilliant casting choice. So I think sometimes when you get it right, they get it so right, mm-hmm. but it can also go horribly, horribly wrong.
I did also love how Blade Runner 2049, it stayed true to those original themes, but also kind of built up on that yeah. whole idea of, like, you know, identity and trauma and everything, and how they brought in the Ryan Gosling character. I think that's one of the, you know, kind of sequels that proves that this is actually something worth investing in.
Listener says, Tron Legacy, fans were crying out for a sequel to Tron for decades.
Oh, and that was
that's
so bad.
Example.
That was so
I'm just
terrible.
It's an example.
In Independence Day Resurgence, 2 decades later, did anyone need that? T2 Trainspotting, 21 years on.
Yeah, that one I found personally interesting because the cast and the director, it had such a falling out. Ewan McGregor mm-hmm. and Danny Boyle hadn't spoken in nearly a decade over this falling out that they had had. So for me, it was really interesting seeing them all coming back together. It was fine. I don't think we needed it. I don't think I don't think it particularly elevated the original story, but it was a good watch.
Of course, we played a bit of it last night on air, the official trailer for Toy Story 4. Of course, Toy Story 2 came out quickly after Toy Story 1 and some people felt it was better. Toy Story 3 came out, was well over a decade afterwards.
I think it might have been, yeah.
And phew, it worked.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Beautiful.
I think that's, I mean, the trailer for Toy Story 4 is certainly fun. It seems lovely. But I think Toy Story 3, I mean, it just exceeded expectations on an emotional level, on an entertainment level. And I think they set the bar so high. And so I'm slightly worried that they're going to let themselves
Reeves
down.
And Keanu Reeves is in it.
He is in it, yeah.
As Duke Kaboom, who is a stunt cyclist action figure.
But everybody's in it. Fairness.
But at least Tom Hanks and Tim Allen are back. You couldn't change the voices of Woody and Buzz Lightyear, could
and
you?
And in fairness, they have been teasing that in reading the script for Toy Story 4. They were both bawling by the end. So I would say bring your tissues because this is going to be another tearjerker.
And of course, actually, we forgot when it comes to Pixar, The Incredibles 2 was 14 years after The Incredibles.
Yeah, even though the actual movie itself only takes place moments after The Incredibles end. So it's kind of weird. And I always find that it's strange with these movies, and you'll find it with the Toy Story trilogy as well, but watching Incredibles and then Incredibles 2, the development in the animation over a number of years, it just makes leaps and bounds. It's kind of extraordinary, but also slightly surreal watching those movies in a row.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing. Like when you watch them back to back, that's so striking. Mm-hmm. But when you grow up and you leave that gap, you kind of grow up with the animation, so you don't notice it as much. You're like, oh, I've evolved, animation's evolved. It's fine.
Michael in Limerick says Blade Runner 2049 is one of the most boring films of all time, right up there with
beautiful.
Eyes Wide Shut. There you go.
Eyes Wide Shut. You have interesting taste in films, sir.
Ro McDermott from Hot Press, Deirdre Malumbi for entertainment.ie. Thank you both for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.